MRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A federal judge dismisses some parts of a lawsuit against Augusta County's sheriff. Unemployment creeps up in Virginia. And just over a week before the transition to a new administration in Richmond, Jeff Shapiro surveys the political landscape. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, January 9th. On New Year's Eve, a federal judge dismissed parts of a lawsuit against Augusta County Sheriff Donald Smith, but let other pieces of the litigation proceed. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The lawsuit was filed last May by a former deputy, Dennis Reynolds, as WHSV and other news outlets previously reported. Court documents lay out a series of conflicts between him and his employer. Reynolds alleges the sheriff sent him numerous inappropriate personal text messages, which he supposedly asked Reynolds to delete when the deputy was under investigation by state police for delaying a report of his brother's single-vehicle car accident. Then, following a spinal tumor diagnosis, Reynolds went through physical and mental health struggles and took a number of days off work, leading to disputes between him and supervisors over alleged sick leave violations and performance issues, eventually leading to his forced resignation. Afterwards, he claims the sheriff defamed him by petitioning the Virginia Department of Criminal Justice Services to decertify him as a law enforcement officer, although Reynolds successfully appealed that. He also says Smith defamed him by passing along a so-called Brady letter about Reynolds to potential employers, including the Nelson County Sheriff's Office. Brady letters are issued by a prosecutor's office and disclose to defense attorneys and often law enforcement leadership that the officer's trustworthiness has been compromised in some way. On December 31st, U.S. District Judge Jasmine Yoon ruled against Reynolds on many of his claims, but allowed one to proceed, his claim that his due process rights were violated when Smith sought his decertification without giving him a chance to defend his credibility. Yoon also wrote that Reynolds has 21 days to file an amended complaint concerning his First Amendment and defamation claims, or else those will also be dismissed with prejudice. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted more details at WMRA.org and on our app. Virginia's employment numbers are strong, but have softened since last year. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released its November jobs report for Virginia on Wednesday. The unemployment rate was 3.5%, which is lower than the national rate, but it was 0.6% higher than what Virginia recorded at the same time last year. In a press release, Governor Glenn Youngkin said the report reflects an anticipated shift away from reliance on government employment. President Trump has been pushing to shrink federal payrolls. Other data out this week show a clearer increase in unemployment. According to Virginia Works, new unemployment claims were about 12% higher than this week last year, and continued claims were 19% higher. In Charlottesville, the community is mourning local leader and mentor Eddie Harris, who died in December at age 69. City Council honored Harris at its Monday meeting. Hannah Davis Reed with VPM News reports.
Harris founded Vinegar Hill Magazine to better represent Black Charlottesville residents in the local press. Through the Ready Kids Real Dads program, Harris coached incarcerated fathers and helped them connect with their loved ones during structured contact visits. Martez Tez Tolbert participated in the Real Dads program at the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail. He spoke at Monday's council meeting.
I stand before you today to formalize what we in this community have known for decades, that Eddie Harris was a giant amongst men.
Tolbert says Harris gave him the tools to mend his most important relationships.
Because of what he taught me in Real Dads, I was able to rebuild the bridge back to my children and their mother.
Harris's memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Charlottesville.
Hannah Davis Reed reporting. The Minneapolis mother shot dead by an ICE officer Wednesday was once a student at Old Dominion University. WHRO's Ryan Murphy reports.
37-year-old Renee Good, who was known as Renee Macklin while attending ODU, graduated with an English degree in 2020. The creative writing student and U.S. citizen won a poetry award from the university the same year. The Trump administration has claimed Good was trying to run ICE agents over with her car and that the shooting was in self-defense. Videos from multiple angles posted on social media contradict that account.
Ryan Murphy reporting. As the General Assembly prepares to gavel into session next week, the word to watch is affordability. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Last year, Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed a bill that would have allowed Prince William County to require developers there to include affordable housing in their building plans. This year, Delegate Sam Rasul has a bill that would allow Roanoke officials to make similar requirements.
We've got to make sure that when we have new developments, that at least a portion of those new developments is accessible to everyday people in our communities, like our teachers, law enforcement, firefighters, people who deserve to be able to live in the very communities they are serving.
Members of the General Assembly will also be considering a separate bill that would give every city council and board of supervisors across Virginia the ability to make demands for affordability on developers. Here's Sheila Hurley-Hennessy at the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy.
That is the essence of what zoning is, local governments telling developers what they're allowed to build and where. And when localities prioritize affordable housing, it makes sense that they would say, if you want to build in our jurisdiction, you have to include some affordable housing in your development.
Now the Democrats have a trifecta with the House, Senate, and governor's office, they'll be able to move much more of their affordability agenda into law. I'm Michael Pope.
Glenn Youngkin is heading into the last week of his term as governor, while Abigail Spanberger is putting her administration together. Politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
Heading into the beginning of the General Assembly session next week, Jeff Shapiro, Glenn Youngkin is on his way out the door, off of stage right. What's his legacy?
Well, this is going to be the governor's Groucho Marx, hello, I must be going moment. He will bid adieu to the legislature and the people of Virginia on Wednesday when the legislature opens. It'll be his final State of the Commonwealth message. The governor has been talking a lot about his work in economic development and trying to turn around schools post-COVID. I think that the legacy of this administration is largely the defensive stance of this governor. Remember, once the legislature returned to full Democratic control in 2023, Youngkin had to use his veto a record number of times, nearly 400 times, to prevent the Democrats, he would say, from taking the state over the cliff. Sometimes progress is measured by saying no, but there was much that Youngkin aspired to accomplish, and there was much that the Democrats denied him.
So Governor-elect Abigail Spanberger will be inaugurated next weekend, Saturday, January 17th, and she's still making appointments to fill out her government. And Jeff Shapiro, I understand she's keeping some Republicans on board?
Yes, and in the finance secretariat, which I think makes a lot of sense, that tends to be among the least partisan, the least political elements of the state's operations. Michael Maul will stay on as head of the Planning and Budget Department. He's actually served Democratic governors as well. David Richardson, a former McGuire Woods partner, Youngkin appointed as state treasurer. He is going to remain on as well. The governor-elect almost finished installing her cabinet. The latest appointment, Jeffrey Smith, the former superintendent of the Hampton school system, is her pick for Secretary of Education. Governor-elect also going outside of the Department of State Police to name a new superintendent, Jeff Katz, recently retired head of the Chesterfield Police Department. The Department of State Police typically promotes, its superintendent is promoted from within the ranks. This is only the second time in about 30 years that a governor has gone outside the department to select a superintendent. And the new weed czar, if you will, the head of the cannabis initiative, will be Adam Eben, a state senator from Northern Virginia.
So you mentioned Adam Eben got that appointment to the Cannabis Commission. That will create another special election. It seems like every Tuesday in Virginia we have special elections. There will be that special election to fill his seat. And then the leading contender there is Delegate Elizabeth Bennett Parker. So there's another special election for the potentially for the House seat, in addition to the seat that is being vacated by David Bulova and Candy Munden King and Jeff Shapiro. We've got a lot of special elections on the docket here.
Oh, yes. It's, one domino after another. Democrats have held, to no surprise, two Richmond area legislative seats, a state Senate seat of the lieutenant governor-elect, Ghazala Hashmi. Mike Jones has won that seat. He's off to the Senate. His House seat also tipped Democratic. It's going to Charlie Schmidt, a former ACLU lawyer. By the way, speaking of the legislature, the Speaker of the House, Don Scott, will have a new chief of staff, and not just anyone. His law partner, Jeff Bright, who's a veteran Hampton Roads Democrat and a fixer of sorts, navigating the intersection of business and politics in behalf of any number of clients.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Finally today, as sovereign nations, tribes in Virginia have the right to consult with state agencies on certain environmental permits and reviews. This week, the Rappahannock tribe said that did not happen with two projects related to the Rappahannock River. Virginia Public Radio's Pamela D'Angelo has the details.
The Rappahannock tribe is objecting to a new state permit for Caroline County to withdraw more than 3 billion gallons of water a year from the Rappahannock River, and a Department of Wildlife Resources proposal that would decrease protections for fish from water intake valves. The tribe says Caroline County and the Commonwealth of Virginia have proceeded without tribal consultation. And while the tribe said it's not opposed to Caroline County's use of surface water for public drinking purposes, it shouldn't come at the expense of tribal rights or the river's health. Part of that concern is that once used and treated, the water would be returned to the Mattapony River and not the Rappahannock. The tribe sent letters during public comment periods to both agencies. DWR said it is still considering public input and will make a decision in the coming weeks. DEQ said it received a notice of appeal from the Rappahannock tribe on December 29th and cannot comment on pending litigation. I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.